stand beside me. We're better as a unit. Ain't enough bullets in a gun to hit us. Hey, welcome to the Code Switch Podcast. My name is Emmanuel. I have Trevor here. It's co-hosted by the both of us. So my name is Emmanuel. I'll go ahead and introduce myself. I am a software engineer. Been in the industry for over a decade now. I say decade just to make it sound good. But about 12 years. So decent experience in a wide variety of industries when it comes to software development. Started out in healthcare, then jumped into pretty much consulting, which is where I met Trevor. We work for various different companies there. Cracker Barrel is probably the biggest one from that job. And then moved over into doing a lot more UI work because I was a back-end developer, did more UI work until my next job, which has been the automotive industry. And I've been in the automotive industry for about the last 7 or 8 years. Hand it over to you, Trev.
Yeah, so Trevor Evans, I've been in the industry for right at 10 years now, actually. It was about 10 years last month. So graduated from school. First job out of college was where I met Emmanuel, or as we call him, Hollywood. He became my mentor, took me under his wing. I know a lot of the time he likes to give me a lot of credit, but in reality, you know, I truly did learn a lot from him. I picked up .NET while I was at that company. Stayed there for about a year and a half, and then I actually went into contracting for the Department of Defense. So I did that for a few years, and I kind of went a little backwards in technology as far as like modern tech stack. So when we were kind of at the consulting company, I was doing more ASP.NET MVC. Back then, you know, jQuery was real popular, Ajax, and like the Razor page views. When I went over to the Department of Defense, I actually was doing some desktop development for a while there before they put me back in the web space doing kind of the same thing, ASP.NET MVC. And then after, I think about 3 years, a little over 3 years, I went to my next company, WEX, where they deal with, they call themselves a fintech company. I say that loosely. They kind of dabble in different spaces. They do support customers financially, so they give out these fuel cards, and then they have this whole process for collecting money on the back end. But they also dabble in like corporate payments, also the health and benefits industry. So I was there for about 5 years, and then earlier this year, I was actually affected by a layoff. And luckily, thank God, I was able to quickly rebound from that. So now I'm a senior engineer at another consulting type company. And yeah, currently doing that, doing some real cool stuff, doing a lot of front-end development. So kind of digging into more React. Actually stumbled upon this platform called Clerk, which is a much cheaper version of Otho. Get a lot of good stuff on the free tier. So doing a lot of that and really enjoying it.
Yeah. We need to talk about Clerk.js sometime, man. Get your thoughts.
So you've been dabbling in Clerk.
I know a little bit about it.
It's powerful, man. It's powerful. I'm pretty surprised at what all you can do with it, especially like you're able to like break down like by organizations. And this is all on the free tier. I think that's what impresses me the most. You know, I don't know if you've done any stuff with like their JWT templates.
Nah, I haven't.
Yeah, it's nice, man. So that's something I've been working on recently. So a client came to us and they already had an existing code base, and it obviously it's a mess, right? Because that's why they brought it to us. So they had this Django, they were using Django, but then they had Vue.js code that they were serving up statically through the Django application. So it was pretty gnarly. So we broke it apart, and they did not like the admin interface that Django provides. So we stumbled upon Clerk, and we were like, hey, you know, let's use Clerk, and that they can administer, you know, set up organizations for their customers. And then we're going to embed some of their UI functionality, some of Clerk's UI functionality directly in the app so that their customers can actually go in and add members to the organization. But by us splitting out that UI, because now that's all in React, the Django now acts as a backend API. So so what we did was we set up a JWT template within Clerk. And really the only reason I did that, one thing I don't agree with as far as Clerk is they don't let you kind of get flexible with certain things. You have to create like a whole new JWT template. So that was a little annoying, but it's all good. So set up a custom JWT template, and then on the back end, they actually provide you with the signing key, and then you can use that to validate the JWT, and then obviously like your traditional claims, right? Like expired, not before, authorized parties. So on the back end, we're like validating all of that, but it's coming directly from Clerk. So now Clerk is really driving the authorization workflow on both the front end and back end. So it's really nice. And I mean, this is all like with a free tier.
Yeah, no, that's nice. I tell you, so I actually haven't wrote any code with ClerkJS. It's typically when I'm looking up building apps and writing apps, trying to figure out what authorization I'm going to use. Am I going to roll my own? You know how I do, right? Mainly because I'm looking at pricing and things like that. And Super Tokens has really, really intrigued me because it's like self-hosting, but even then that comes with a little bit of cost. But the intriguing thing about ClerkJS, not with just the pricing, but typically when building, especially business to business applications, the tenant support or organization support, like you mentioned earlier. And one of the things I really liked about, really intrigued me about ClerkJS was the switching that you could do between organizations. So let's say you're part of one organization or multiple organizations.
Yeah.
It kind of has that already built in and stuff like that, right? Yeah. Where, you know, I tried to build that by hand one time and I was hitting the authorization API that I had built, trying to get a new token. I'm pretty sure it was insecure to be perfectly honest, but you know.
Yeah, man, it's really nice, man. And that's actually how we have it set up in our app, because our client, their customers, in the legacy application, they should have the functionality to switch between, they historically, they called them device groups, but it's basically an organization. So gotcha. It's basically the same workflow. So we actually have UI components provided by Clerk out of the box, where you can actually like see different record or how can I explain this better? Within Clerk, you can define metadata, and you can define public metadata and private metadata, depending on like sensitivity of it. And then you can use that metadata to basically show it within your UI, but then it's like per organization. And then within our workflow, their customer can choose whatever you know they want to open up, and then based on what they choose, it will activate that organization on the Clerk side. So they actually have components. Yeah, so like they have components that support not actually being in the context of a single organization at that moment, but then you can actually like set them to an active organization context after they do some sort of action.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
You said that's part of free tier.
This is all in the free tier, man. The only thing that the free tier limits you on is the number of people that you can add to an organization. So that is something that we discussed with our client, and we were like, hey, you know, you only get to like, I think up to like 5 members per organization.
Yeah, it's small.
And so that's very small, right? So our client was like, hey, let's develop in the free tier, and then when we're ready to productionalize, we'll go up to a paid tier and be able to add more people to an organization. But all this stuff I'm talking about, like, we've been able to implement, and we haven't spent any money yet.
That's what's up. I always feel like if I start working with them, I'm like, man, 5 people, by the time I'm in my development environment, I promise you I got about 3 already taken up for like test users, right? So it's like,
ooh, exactly. Exactly. By the time you add your development team, you know, right, like, by the time you do all that. That's 5 right there, you know?
Yep.
So yeah.
That's cool though,
yeah,
man.
Clerk's really nice, man. Really nice.
That's cool. So we jumped right into it, kind of taking a step back. You know, what is the Code Switch podcast and what is code switching? So kind of define code switching for those who don't are not really too familiar with the term. Google defines it as the practice of alternating between different languages, dialects, or communication styles depending on the situation or the audience. I would say that code switching is like more of a universal trait that everyone shares. It's not just specific to the Black community, but I do believe that it shows up differently in different communities. Like, you know, speaking for myself as a Black person, code switching comes in many forms, but I'll mainly summarize it as showing up as someone who I think my peers would feel comfortable being around versus how I may naturally be as a person. What about you?
Yeah, so I would agree with what you said. From my perspective, when I think of code switching, exactly what you said, although when I typically think of code switching, I always think about people that are not like Black. So, and I guess that comes from like the thought of like, anytime I'm around someone that might not look like someone that I think would understand my culture, I'm almost like immediately hesitant, right, to like show my full self with them. Like, it's almost like, oh, you know, if I walk, you know, if I go over there and I start saying certain slang terms or something like that, are they going to be like like bewildered and confused, you know, because I'm like over here saying stuff they don't understand? Does it make them feel uncomfortable? You know, like, so it's a balancing act, right? And sometimes I wonder, is that appropriate? Like, or should I open up a little bit, you know, and say like, hey, this is who I am, you know? But at the same time, I don't want to come off like, you know, like in our community, we use the term ratchet, right? Like, I don't want to come off like ratchet, or like, I just don't know. I don't have any couth, you know?
Yeah. So that's actually a very, very interesting thing. Something that came up, or at least I thought about last week, and then kind of thinking about my tenure at, you know, various places that I work at. One of those is, if you were to define Black culture, I think that there is a, thought process that Black culture and American culture are synonymous. And I don't know if you agree with that thought, that train of thought, but the reason why I bring that up is because at work, there are different, you know, ethnic groups, Indian, white, obviously Black, Asian, et cetera, et cetera. And I noticed that when working with, you know, those different groups, depending on which group it is outside of Black, there's this idea that, you know, the way they communicate or the way communication happens, it comes off as, hey, well, that culture communicates like this. That culture, that group communicates like this. This is what this verbiage means in that culture. But kind of when it comes to us, I've never seen or heard of any group or the group give us that type of grace. And grace may not be the right word, but basically it's like, okay, well, when we're communicating, it's not, well, that's how their culture is and that's how they communicate. I think it's typically taken as, well, Americans communicate that way and Black Americans are kind of rolled up into there. And it's like, well, that's not true. I've never, you know, I don't communicate the same as, you know, a white American, right? And I ain't saying I communicate the same as another Black American too. You know, our culture has been taken and kind of, you know, is non-existent for the most part. In America, we're still building that and kind of defining that as a group. But at the same time, it's like, you know, will it make somebody feel a certain type of way if I communicate this type of way? Like, I feel like we're a lot more conscious and sensitive to that than other groups are.
So based on like everything you were saying, like, that's all facts. It's the same thing for me where like, I feel, not only do I feel like uncomfortable as far as like potentially like bringing that up, but like, do you remember when we used to go to Village Door in Destin? And I can't tell you how many times people would come up to me. And I think I even heard, like, maybe once or twice it happened to you as well, where someone would come up and say, oh, hey, can you teach me how to Dougie, or show me this dance, you know? And the first thought in my mind was always, what makes you think I know how to do that?
Right, right. It's 30 people in here, bro. Like,
right, exactly. And you come up to me out of everybody, you know? And I mean, man, we've gotten some of the craziest, like, most outlandish, like, questions, comments, you know, People, you know, talking about, oh, you know, I only talk to, you know, black guys, stuff like that, you know, and it's just like, it's just so outlandish when you hear it. And like you said, kind of going back to what you've been talking about, like over the overarching theme for, you know, code switching, it's almost like you change up in the moment because you don't want to like go off or like, you know, cause a scene or a big confrontation. So you almost hold back your true emotion, you know. I would say in that moment, I'm definitely code switching, because if it were my way in my world, you know, I would react totally different. You know, like it would be a whole like a fight or a big confrontation. Like I would definitely take it there. But, you know, especially in a when you're doing good for yourself, you know, you have things to lose, right? And so it's almost like, does that play a part into it? You know, where it's like, well,
yeah.
Do you have to bend your personality for the sake of surviving in this society?
Yep. Yeah. I got a few not safe for work experiences from that place. It was
agreed.
Crazy. I mean, kind of to set the tone, because people don't know what Village Door is, right? Set the tone. It was a restaurant, actually, that turned into a bar type nightclub type scene, you want to call nightclub in Destin, Florida, but nightclub yep. type scene, where it was mainly in this what do you call, basically a village, like its own little community and everything like that, where you had to go through security to get yes. in and everything, and you get in there yes. and they're just playing music. Sometimes they have a live band, or used to have a live band. I think they moved away from that a while ago, but used to have
really?
A live band. Yeah. They don't do live band anymore. I don't even think they have the stage Whoa. Up there like that anymore. They don't have the instruments or anything. So, but they would Whoa. Play, you know, top, I think, 100 pop music and stuff like that. But most of the people in that place did not look like us, right? Like, I mean, if we were there, we were probably one of three, right? Me, you, and
exactly.
you know, somebody, just a random person that happened to be there. So that was kind of exactly. the scene and kind of the tone in the environment. So it's like when you're in those type of environments, you definitely don't want to be, you know, that guy, right? Like it's like, oh wow, you just came up to me and like I said, I've had some
right.
not safe for work experiences there. I'm talking offensive experiences where it's like, see, now if I respond how anybody else responds, it's not going to end the same way. And then it's like, again, to your point. A lot to lose, right? It's, I got a career, I got things going on. It's like, is this not really worth that? But I don't have the advantage or the privilege to be able to say, oh yeah, you know what, I can address it here.
So that sparks another question in my mind, right? So when we talk about code switching, do you think that can protect others from playing a victim card?
So when you say protect others, what do you mean?
So kind of going back to what you just said, right? It's like, hey, I have a lot to lose, but you know, I really could take it there, go off, yada yada. But come on, I mean, for a second, like I'm just gonna candidly speaking, like you just said, if I retaliate, then I'm the bad person. I feel that can happen a lot in society where when you react, then the person that you react towards all of a sudden tries to claim like victim, right? And it's almost like, oh my gosh, you know, why is this person like coming at me like that? What is all of this energy? You know, why are you being so angry and confrontational, and oh my gosh, where is all of this coming from, you know? So it's almost like, so my question is like, do you feel like in a way you're kind of like preventing them from even being able to do that, right? Because you're just like, you know what, I'm not even going to take it there, because I know if I take it there, you're going to immediately try to put yourself in that role.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I think of it that way, right? Like, I mean, to their mm-hmm. to their point, right? They will be the victim of my response, mm-hmm. And I'm not, I'm not a fighter, right? Like, it's not about fighting, but it will be. It's words, right. And I can articulate my thoughts mm-hmm. very clearly mm-hmm. and very direct. I would say I actually think more about my fellow black person, right? Like, if I respond, I don't think this happens in other cultures. I don't know. I'm not part of other cultures. I can only speak for ours. I think that a lot of us walk around feeling like, hey, we represent an entire race of people. Right. And so if I respond to you in a way that's perceived as negative, perceived as angry or anything like that, then I'm beating that stereotype of black people in America. Right. And it's like, I want to change that stereotype. I want to change the perspective of just black people in America. And so it's like, in this situation, you know what? I'm going to let you have it and move on.
I think that's a great response. My question to that, because I feel like I completely agree with that. How long though? Right? Because I mean, think about it. MLK was the same way, right? He was like, we can't respond with violence, you know? And here we are today in what years were we going? 2018-ish? Like, yeah. I mean, here we are.
Pre-COVID. Years.
Yeah, like right pre-COVID, and still, you know, you can't just go out and just sit down without someone coming over and just saying something that's offensive. And it's like we're always the ones that have to bite our tongues because we're trying, you know, we're in it for like the long game.
Yeah, I would say that segues perfectly into why this podcast, right? I think that
facts.
You know, is we're kind of doing this podcast to really push the normalization of us in spaces where we've always belonged. And not only have we belonged, but we've earned the right to be in, right? Because to be fair, right, when we talk about work and things like that, you know, we went to school just like everybody else. So we put in the work to get this education and learn however you got it. Right. Just like everybody else. So why do we have to feel that we're not safe to be who we are in those spaces? So that's why I feel like this podcast is important. It's not going to solve all the problems. Right. Probably not going to solve most of them, but at least it gives us a safe space, I guess you can say, where we can really present ourselves as who we are as black people, as people in tech, as people in this world. Right. As dealing with the whole political climate these days. Just really having a space that we can really be authentic. So I think that's why this podcast is important.
100%. And kind of piggybacking off what you just said, think about how many, you know, we kind of went into our background a little bit, right? Think about out of all the different companies you've been at, how many times you've been able to either work with other black individual contributors. Or I'll take it a step further. How many black people have you seen in management? It's sure. Always you look around and you're just like, man, where are we? You know, like, where are my people? You know? So I think to your point, this is a way of us like providing that safe space, you know, saying, hey, we've done the work. Hey, we're out here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love the fact that we're putting this podcast out into the world and there's probably people that feel the same way as us. And this gives them a point where they can connect with us, they can connect with other listeners, and we can just kind of create that community. Another thing I'll hit on too is we've talked in the past about that. I think it was on Facebook, the group that we talked about, where I think there were a lot of black people just conversing about trying to get into tech. You know, I think this hopefully can be a jump off point for people looking to get into that world, right? Like, I feel like between the two of us, we have a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of tips, you know what I'm saying, that we can share. And even people connecting with other people that might be in tech, you know what I'm saying? Like, you build it, they will come. Other engineers, other managers will become a part of this community, and they can connect with people that are just watching and saying, like, man, how do I get into this? You know what I'm saying? And last thing I'll say is, you know, man, even seeing the few black people that I have in tech, you know, like, you know, I met you, we met Ed, Juwan, Carlos, but you see that I'm not naming a lot of black women. And that's another thing that I really would like to see more of, you know. I know they have like the what is it, black women in tech or black girls in tech? I don't remember.
That's a good, we probably should know that though.
Yeah. But, you know, they have facts. But I know they have kind of a movement going now. But that's one thing I would love to kind of see out of grow out of this. It, you know, hopefully seeing some black women come forth and say, you know, hey, I've been interested in getting into tech. You know what I'm saying? How can I go about that? Or some black women that are already in tech and say, hey, I do da 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 da. You know, like this. These are the steps we're taking, and it can educate you and me. You know, so I think there's a lot of good that's going to come out of this, and those are the reasons why it's important to me.
Yeah, and I'll say you brought up that group. I think sometimes, a lot of times, actually, I won't even say sometimes. A lot of times, we can be our own worst enemies, right? You know, that group is put together to really kind of just identify black people in tech, right? It's not many of us at all, and really kind of come together and help out. And the tone that I feel really is really present in that group is that it's a lot of gatekeeping going on. And I had a theory.
Yes.
I had a theory about it. My theory on it is this. I feel like that we're not in a lot of spaces, right? That's fairly evident, especially professional spaces.
Right.
And when we get in those spaces, I think there's a sense of accomplishment, which, you know, we should feel accomplished. But I also think that it becomes like this novelty, this idea that only the best of the best of us can get in these spaces. And so in order to prevent, you know, or to keep it very novel, you try to limit the amount of people that get in. So what happens is that a lot of questions will come up. Hey, how can I get into security? How can I get into development? And a lot of the responses I see is, well, I did it, so you can do it. And that's just not, to me, that's just not the right response, right? Like, we, you know, everybody's situation is different. We all got into this field probably fairly different ways. I mean, I wasn't even a computer science major, right? I was a business management information systems major, which really should put me on a business analyst, program manager, project manager track, right? And you know, I'm in software development. Right. So we all kind of got into our different ways. And especially with AI coming up, and I know we got some, you know, we got some conversations coming on about that, but with AI coming up, it's just make that a lot more difficult to really, really get into this field. And we need each other more and more. And I just don't like the whole sentiment of like, I'm a gatekeep this knowledge and you figure it out. Or I'll sell you this knowledge by coming to my boot camp and I'll charge you $1,500, $2,000. Come get this knowledge. Like, that's kind of, it's not
especially when in our community, right? Like, we, like, you know, I'm just gonna say it, like, this is my opinion, we started so far behind, right? Like, we started so far behind as a people. So some, you know, I think about that sometimes, where, you know, if someone is saying, hey, I want to get into tech, and to your point, you say, oh, buy my boot camp for $2,000 or something like that, it's like, do they even have $2,000 that they can just hand to you? You know what I'm saying? And I'm by no means am I saying that all black people are broke, because I'm definitely not saying that. But I mean, look, I mean, you and I have both been there where, you know, you check the check. You know what I'm saying? Hey, if I blow this $1,000 on something over there, I know for the next couple weeks, I mean, hot dogs, you know what I'm saying? Them ham and cheese sandwiches, you know? So, you know, so it's kind of like, it's all, I feel like it's also disrespectful, you know, towards the community when you do something like that. But let me ask you this. What do you think, why do you think they gatekeep? Like, what do you think is the source of that?
I think they feel elite, right? It comes to, hey, I'm here now, right? I'm making, because if you look at that group, a lot of it is like, how do I make six figures? Like, six figures is the goal, right? And you know, six figures in this day and age really ain't much at all, to be perfectly honest, right? They're like, you know, how do you make six figures and things like that? I think they feel elite, and it's like, I got this status, and the people who are trying to get in look up to me, and it's like, okay, I'm you get the big head, right? You get the ego, and the ego start talking. Yeah. And it's like, hey, no, you mean you want to come up to where I am? I can show you. Because I'm an expert and I can present myself as an expert. And I listen to those people talk, like, not listen, but I read what they type and things like that. And I'm reading it. And I do a lot of research. One of the things that I truly believe is that I don't believe I'm the smartest person in the room, but I do strive to be the most well-researched person. And so mm-hmm. when they're talking and they're putting these statuses out, like, hey, you know, this is this, this is that. And I'm like, you really don't sound like you know what you're talking about. Like, to a person who doesn't really know, you sound great. You sound like a genius. You sound elite. But to a person who really kind of understands at least the basics of it and maybe some nuances mm-hmm. of a lot of things, like, you're kind of just talking and you're really selling something that's not really valuable to that person. But now this, you don't let this person astray and they think this is what it is.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, I think it comes from hey, I feel elite. I feel at the top of the mountain and I'm looking down at you all, and they get the ego. And again, you're talking to a group of people who have never had anything. So when you give them six figures, it's like, hey, I got six figures. But a lot of people don't make six figures, especially a lot of us don't make six figures. So now they in this elite status and they want to stay there.
I really like everything you just said, and that's very unfortunate. And also, kind of, this is kind of going on a tangent a little bit, but I feel like in those types of groups, what I see a lot of is like talking, like discussion around certs. Like, get this cert, get that cert, get that cert. And I've always thought in my mind, like, sure. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that they're all bad. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, like, you're sitting here saying that this person needs to go and get like three certifications to get their foot in the door. And I'm just like, I'm not buying that. I'm like, multiple certifications to get your foot in the door? Like, I don't know about that. And that's a lot of money, bro. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. That a little bit of a tangent there, but yes, I mean, I love what you said about kind of that, like, that elitist mindset, you know, and that's actually very toxic, you know, because I feel like that creates classes even within our community, right? So you already have like the social classes, the race classes, and now you even break it down further within our own community, you know, and that it's unfortunate, man. It's unfortunate.
And the ridiculousness of it is, right, like, you're breaking it down amongst people who, in the grand scheme of things, have nothing or have very little, right? It's like we're fighting over scraps, right? Like, you all are fighting over scraps. Like, we should be collectively coming together and figuring out how to achieve more than just trying to protect the little scraps that we have, right? But again, from a, you know, community that has collectively never had much, you value everything.
Do you think the people that form that elite ego essentially become almost like, I'm trying to think of a safe for work term for a house Negro. Do you think they in some sort of fashion become that?
It's funny you bring that up, right? Because and man, we had to dive into the deep, deep black culture and things like that. And I think we've definitely got some people on that can do that for us. But if you really think about it, right? Like, only so many people can fit in the house. Right? It's only so much room in the house.
Facts.
The reason why they were that way, and I'm not saying all of them were, but a lot of them were that way, is that, well, if you start coming in, or more people start coming in, somebody has to leave. Right? And
facts.
I think with in tech, it's just not true, though. Like, I think there's too much opportunity in tech. Like, I mean, especially with AI rising, but there's so much opportunity in tech. It's enough room for all of us. It's enough food at the table for all of us to eat. And I just think, kind of going back to you thinking, oh man, if they come in and they do better than me, it's already not a lot of us here. Well, then, you know, I'll be on my way out and they're going to come in and replace me. And again, I think it's a sad mentality, but, you know, it is what it is. And I really think, too, that those people who do think like that aren't really confident in their own skills, right? Like, for me, speaking for myself, hey, look, I know what I know. I am who I am, and it is what it is, right? If I'm not good enough to do a job, then that's just facts. I'm not good enough to do the job, but I believe in myself, and I have a lot of confidence in my skills at work and in this industry to really be able to do what I do. So I don't feel intimidated like that.
Yeah, and I yearn to see more of our people in tech, man, because like I love the idea of having a black coworker, you know what I'm saying, that you could just message and you guys can speak the lingo, you know, and there's no, you know, there are no barriers there. There's no hesitation there. And, you know, you just, you know, like that just becomes like your work, homie, you know? So, so for me, man, like, I'm like, man, build it. They will come. Let's get more people in tech, man. And let's connect.
Yeah, I agree. Like I value that relationship where it's like, I can actually work with someone who I may be able to relate to on different levels, right? Not just work. And it also helps me to see, hey, am I viewing something, you know, the wrong way, right? Like, what's your experience? Do we have a shared experience here at work, or is it really just me? I actually run into that work right now. It's like, no, I'm one of the few, actually, in my organization. I think it's two black men. One, I think it's like a scrum master, and then I'm the manager. I'm a manager. So if I'm forgetting anybody, I apologize, but I don't think I am. And it's like, I don't have anybody else that I work with that had a relationship where it's like, I'm experiencing these things. I'm seeing these things. I feel like actually some of these things are microaggressions, to be perfectly honest with you. But I don't have anybody else that I can kind of bounce it off of because they may not view it the same way. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. And that brings up another thought of mine as well. You talked about one of your black coworkers being a scrum master, you know. I feel like I see that like drilling a level deeper. I feel like when I do see black people in tech, I feel like more often than not, they're in more of a non-technical role, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know. Like, I mean, if that's your steez, that's your steez, you know. I would just love to see more like blacks on the engineering side, you know. Back when I was at WEX, similar situation. We brought in a black scrum master. I actually interviewed him, and I remember he did well, and I remember making a commitment, and I'm saying, I'm going to get this guy, you know. And so we brought him in. But we also had a black business analyst, you know, and he came in. But it was same situation where neither one of them were like in technical roles, you know. So and that's fine, you know, nothing's wrong with that. But I would just love to see over time more blacks that are on the engineering side.
Yeah, I think they'll get there. I here's my advice to those that come in a non-technical role. Do your best not to stay there. Try to get involved in everything, because especially with like scrum masters, if they have to start cutting the fat at work, y'all want to, you know, they're going to say, hey, an engineer can do this job. And I'm not saying that is fair or that's true. But, you know, from a leadership standpoint, it's like, well, what value are you bringing other than, not to diminish the role, but organizing meetings, making sure people are doing Scrum right, which we're going to get into, you know, whole Agile and Scrum and how...
Right.
I don't really think is worth it anymore, but I'll leave that thought on those thoughts for later. But you know, just don't stay there, right? Like once you get your foot in the door and you at a tech company, I mean, do your job, right? But also put in the extra work to go and get more valuable skills, more transferable skills into the tech world. Because at the end of the day, they're still going to need tech people no matter how well AI does. And let me not say that because I don't know the future, but AI is going to do well, but we're not there yet. And so they're still going to need tech people. And they're still going to be hiring. So really, really get take advantage of the opportunities that you have to be around these developers. Say, hey, how do I do this? Ask questions. You know, I'm a big questions. Well, I'm a big why person. So I encourage, you know, that's just my advice to them. Just get more into the technical side.
Yeah. And I mean, I 100% agree. Right. I would actually say, man, I feel like we're already on that journey now where I feel like the scrum master role is already becoming a little more diminished over time. Just, you know, when I was at WEX, you know, you hit the nail on the head. Like when they started cutting people, scrum masters were one of the first to go, you know. Like I was affected a year and a half after scrum masters were already let go, you know. So you're absolutely right. Like they're going to be one of the first ones that leadership is coming for, you know? So, I completely agree. I would say if you come in a non-technical role, I would strongly advise that you maybe try to look into maybe moving into more of a technical role. The one exception I would make to that though, is on the product side. And the reason I say that is because I feel like companies really, really like to have product people, you know. I'm not trying to, I have to be careful about jumping ahead of the gun, because we have some future episodes surrounding that. But yeah, like I if you're a black product manager, I say stay where you're at, because they love you.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I have a theory. I think that product is valued maybe as highly as sales. Like, if you think about it, we live in this society where it's about selling you things. And what I found with companies is that they're real good at selling things that don't exist. And as long as they're able to sell, pretty much selling dreams, right? As long as they're able to sell dreams, they'll keep it around. And product helps to do that in some form or fashion. Again, I have a love-hate relationship, I guess I would say, with product, more probably on the, you know, dislike side than love. And there are I work with some good product managers, right? But for the most part, you know, if I had my choices, you know, the conversation would be very short. So,
well, with me working at a consulting joint right now, we don't have product, we don't have scrum masters. Like, we're really winging it on these projects. So we just jump in, and I mean, like, I'm on a project right now with one other engineer, and I'm pretty much leading it, you know. So and it that has its challenges, but it is nice to not have to deal with kind of all the process and sense of things, right? Like, I come in, do my work, you know what I'm saying? Hey, this is the direction we're taking. You get buy-in from your client, you get buy-in from leadership, get buy-in from your team, and, you know, you move forward.
Well, those conversations are going to get a little spicy. I'm not going to lie to you.
I have a very strong opinion. And we got to pull up a presentation, like, hey, what value do you bring?
Start pulling out charts and everything. Let's really have a conversation about this, right? All right, because you know, because my whole thing is this, man. My whole thing is this, as a manager, right? Like, it'd be, we get this thing where it's like, hey, we need to help with, you know, we need to help product out. Cool, fine. I have no issues with helping. Who helps us out? Who helps us output all this code that you all are asking, are selling to people and saying, hey, we're going to deliver this. Who's going to write it? Who's going to help us, you know, don't write this, right? So it's like we dabble in the product world, but it's not a mutual thing. And I have a lot of instances of that, but.
Yeah, and you typically find yourself on the short end of the stick, right? Like, they go in a room, they say something to stakeholders that you have no idea about. And the next thing you know, you're being called to the carpet, being asked, well, why is such and such like such and such? Yep, right. Yep. And you're sitting here like, I did not even know that that was a thing. You know,
right,
so
exactly.
What are you talking about? You know, and then come to find out, maybe either the product person misstated it, which is actually part of the reason why, like I've said it to you before, I actually feel like products should report under tech, because they pretty much, they don't have anyone to give them checks and balances. So they get in these calls, they sell a dream, say something that is not true, you know, and before you know it, it just, and then it becomes politics, right? We're not even focused on the product anymore. Now it's, well, he said this and she said that, and let's get understanding. Let's have a meeting about a meeting, you know, instead of actually providing value.
Yeah, I'll leave my product conversations at this. This has been my last thought on this, but I'll never forget. It happened probably fairly recently too. There was a commitment made. It was a commitment made to deliver in like 3 months, something in 3 months. I mean, I wasn't even in the room, right? Like, first off, right there. Well, we've already started off on a rough. I'm not even in the room. There's no technical person in the room. Right. It's just product and UI. It's like, hey, we promised to deliver this within maybe 3 to 6 months. I think it was 3 months, actually. And finally, when I'm brought in, it's like, hey, we need to deliver this in 3 months. I'm looking at the work. I'm like, that's not possible. Like, this is not a thing. And you know, it was a whole bunch of back and forth. But the highlight, I'll never forget this. One guy said, well, if we work really hard, we can deliver. And sure, I don't think I've ever been so annoyed on the call, man. Because my whole thing was this. What do you think we're doing? So are you insinuating that we're not working hard? Like, we're just out here lollygagging around. Just hey, we're just having fun, right? Like I was just so thrown off, man. It was crazy.
That boils my blood, right? Because they essentially put you in this twist arm game, right? Where they basically try to like coerce you into agreeing with them, and I mean, you know, we're both two of the same, right? You know, like I'm not budging on what I said, so right. You know. So now, so guess what? Now it's just an awkward conversation, now there's silence because you say what you say, and I'm like no. And now everyone's just sitting there like,
yeah, exactly. Right. Like, I don't need motivational speeches. Right. Like, we just hit it work, man. Like, well, I don't, you know,
yeah.
Rally the troops.
And bodies does not equal success. Right.
Right. Like,
and facts. Senior leadership has a bad problem with that. Do you need more people? Oh, well, hang on. That does not immediately mean that everything just will work, you know?
Right. Like, all developers are not built the same, right? Like, there are diminishing returns exactly. With a number of people. It's just sometimes, hey, this is truly not possible. Like, go tell them you lied, right? Like, that's my response. And go tell them you lied to them. Hey,
tell them the truth. Tell them exactly. The truth.
I'm a big truth teller, man. I'm a big truth teller. Hey, just tell the true story, man, because what's going to end up happening. Right, you keep lying, saying, hey, now we're doing this, we're actually doing this, and then behind the scenes, we're really not doing it. And then, you know, people at the top are like, well, they said they're doing that, you know, okay, cool, at some point I'll get it. Then, you know, they'll get distracted, another priority will come up, right, and they'll kind of move on. But when they come back to this, and it's still not done, now it's like the finger point begins. Oh, wait, whoa, I thought we were working on this. Hand raised. I never said that. That never came out of my mouth. You had to talk to me, I would have told you exactly what we were doing, because, you know, it's not going to be a whole... You throw me under the bus, right? It's going to be, hey, I've given you the facts. I've given you the truth. And then we can go from there. I can work with the truth. We start lining me and stuff, right? Like, it's just, it doesn't end well.
Right. For anyone. But we tell that because, I think that's, we can have a long conversation about that.
I've seen the powerful fall when the people work together as one. I need you to live or let die. Hold your head high. I'm by your side till it's one. Together we can hold.